Tantor Audio presents Sayador's Heirs by L. E. Modisett, Jr. Narrated by Kirby Hayborn. Prologue. The boy and the girl sit on a carved wooden bench in the shade beside the small courtyard fountain. He has pale white skin, unruly red hair, and a strong straight nose just short of being considered excessive. Her hair is black, as are her eyes, and her skin is smooth, if the light tan of aged parchment. Her name is Kaedra. His is Lariel. Four guards watch them. Two wear white long-sleeved tunics with faded green trim and bear scarce cupridium blades in worn scabbards. The other two sport silvered iron breastplates over dull crimson short-sleeved tunics. Their short swords are of dark iron, carried in oiled leather scabbards that are more like large knife sheaths. The lancers in green watch the guards in crimson, while the guards in crimson watch the boy. No one watches the girl, who fingers a heavy brocade headscarf that she has let slip to reveal some of her hair and her lower face, an act that would be severely condemned were she of lesser rank, older, or in public.
"Why are your guards called lancers?"
She finally breaks the silence.
"They're supposed to be called mirror lancers, but no one except the family or other lancers calls them that. I forget why."
Lariel has not forgotten. He would prefer not to explain, especially when speaking the Hamorian of Afrit, but since the girl just introduced to him as Kaedra less than a quarter glass before speaks no Sayadoran, he has no choice but to speak in her tongue. Once more, the two do not speak for a time, until the girl asks,
"Does your name mean something special in your tongue?"
Lariel considers what he should say for a moment, before replying.
"My grandfather was the Emperor Lephi. One of my ancestors was the Emperor Cariel. My grandmother felt I should be named after both."
"There are no emperors in Hamor. There never have been."
Her voice is firmly serious.
"They were emperors of Sayador," declares Lariel.
"The land that the sea destroyed?"
"The sea only destroyed Sayad. That was the capital. And maybe Fyrad. The accursed forest destroyed most of the other cities and covered the land with endless forest. That was why we came to Hamor."
"My father says you never should have come. He says that Afrit will never be the same."
Lariel knows not to say anything about that.
"Why did your father bring you here?"
"He said I should see Sigawen. He said it was different."
Lariel can feel that there is more she has not said.
"Is it?"
Kaedra nods solemnly.
"How is it different?"
"I thought it would be smaller, and that all the people would be taller."
"Why? Because we have held the river for years against the Heldians?"
"Father doesn't like them. He likes them less than you."
"What about the raiders from the south?"
"He doesn't like them either. They smell bad, he says."
Lariel nods and waits.
"How did you come to Hamor?"
Kaedra asks after another long silence.
"You don't know the story?"
"Surely the daughter of the Duke of Afrit should know that," thinks Lariel.
"I know the sea destroyed Sayador, Sayad, anyway. You came across the great western ocean on a white metal ship. You threatened to sink all the ships in the harbor at Swatheld. My grandfather allowed your father..."
"My grandmother, the Empress. Go on."
"My grandfather allowed your grandmother to purchase these lands. That's what I know. Tell me something I don't know."
"My grandmother was the Empress. She gathered the Mirror Lancers and the Magi onto the Cariel. That was the last fire ship.
They got out of the harbor at Syad just before the big waves smashed and swallowed everything. Then they took the ship to Firead, but the entire city was gone. There was just a big bay there. All the towns along the coast were gone, too. So she ordered the captain to cross the ocean to Hamor. Some people died. When they got to Swartheld, well, you know that part. Then the fire ship carried them up the river here, and the Magi and the Lancers began to build. My grandmother told them what to do. The fire ship stopped the Heldians and the raiders from Meroe from coming down river and bothering people. That was what grandmother promised. Lariel stops and looks at Kaedra, then says, "It wasn't that simple. That's what..." He does not finish the sentence, realizing that he doesn't want to admit that it was his mother who had told him that building Sigilwern and expanding the lands controlled by the Magi had been anything but simple.
"What about your grandmother?" asks Kaedra.
"I told you about her."
"You said what she did. You didn't say what she was like."
"Was she ugly, the way..." The girl stops. Lariel does not press, knowing that someone, perhaps her father, had said that about his grandmother. "She was kind to me, but she didn't put up with any misbehavior. She even swatted my brother. Leffy deserved it. He was hurting the cat that lived in the stable. She was grand and tall, and no one argued with her. Not any of the Magi or the Mirrorlancers. Not even my father, and certainly not my aunt."
"Your aunt?"
"Emeria.
She was the healer who saved Uncle Rom, wasn't she?"
"She is." Lariel knows he should not mention that Rom had attempted an ambush that would have killed his aunt, not when his brother the Duke, and Kaedra's father, is meeting with his own father. He still thinks Rom was sneaky and evil. He does not even consider saying so.
"Is she your favorite aunt?"
"I suppose so. She's my only aunt. Do you have a favorite aunt?"
"Father only has brothers. They can't have consorts unless he doesn't have children. I have two brothers. They're still little. Do you have other brothers or a sister?"
"Besides my brother Leffy, I have one sister. That's Rayala. She's just two."
"I wish I had a sister." Thinking about Rayala, Lariel can't imagine why anyone would want a sister.
He also doesn't want to talk anymore to the strange girl he is supposed to be nice to, but he dutifully asks, "Why?"
"My brothers are always fighting. They play rough."
"Sisters can play rough."
"Not in the palace of the Duke of Afrit.
Not in Swartheld."
She pauses.
"This isn't much of a palace. It's nice, but it's small."
Lariel glances around the North Fountain courtyard, some 20 yards on a side. It doesn't seem that small to him, although his mother has told him that it is tiny compared to the vanished Palace of Light. Sigilwern. 1. The sun beats down on the palace, and Lariel tries not to trudge as he makes his way out into the private south courtyard that has always served as the arms practice area for the family, since the palace was completed some 10 years earlier. The north and south courtyards are the same size, half that of the main central courtyard with its multiple fountains and its walled gardens. The north courtyard has two fountains, making it cooler than the south courtyard, with its small single fountain, its paved open area for weapons practice, while the central courtyard boasts four fountains, spaced so that their mist cools the entire open space. The wooden wand Lariel carries feels heavier than the cupridian blade he will use once his father has decided he is accomplished enough to ride with the Lancers on patrol missions, against either Heldian border forces
or the nomadic raiders that occasionally make their way northward through the grasslands of Meroway. Lariel knows the heavy feel of the wand comes from what awaits him in sparring with Leffy, who is only 3 years older, and not that much taller, but far more at ease with a weapon in his hand than is Lariel, whether the weapon is a saber, or a bow, or lance. Not that Lariel has had any practice with a lance, and little enough with a bow.
"Are you ready?"
asks Leffy from the sunlit center of the courtyard, where he stands waiting, rising the heavy wooden wand that approximates a lancer's saber.
"I'm coming."
Lariel walks from the shadows cast by the three upper levels of the palace and into the sunlight, a brightness whose intensity always seems to surprise him. He can feel the fine grit under the soles of his boots, grit that is everywhere, no matter how often the rough courtyard tiles are swept. Leffy, of course, stands with his back to the sun. Lariel takes a position with the brilliant white sun to his left and motions with his wand for Leffy to move to a point directly across the circle marked in red and black tiles.
"You can't do that in battle," observes Leffy.
"No, but I can choose to fight or not and take a position."
"Not always."
Lariel just waits for Leffy to move or attack. After several moments, Leffy moves, taking a position directly across from his younger brother. Lariel sets his feet, lifts his blade, and concentrates on Leffy and his brother's wand. Leffy half turns, starts to do what looks to be a thrust, but Lariel knows the movement is a feint, because his brother's feet do not move, nor does he shift his weight. Instead of trying to block a thrust that will not come, Lariel merely holds his guard. Then Leffy suddenly drops and brings his wand up, and Lariel barely can beat down the thrust and has to move to the side. Wands move quickly, and then even more quickly. Lariel is already sweating heavily with the effort of countering Leffy's constant attacks, thrusts, and counter-thrusts, and just trying to react. Abruptly, Leffy turns a thrust into a twisting move that rips Lariel's wand out of his sweaty hand. The older youth grins.
"You didn't see that one."
Lariel doesn't reply, but moves to the side of the circle to recover his wand. When he picks it up, the grip of the hilt feels rougher in places where grit has clung to the dampness from his hand. Maybe that will help. In the shadows, he can see Emeira and her mother, his aunt Emeria, and Rayala, all three sitting at a small table. Emeira and Rayala are playing pegboard, but Emeria has been watching the sparring. Why? The other courtyards are cooler. He is still wondering when Leffy speaks.
"That was quick. Do you want to try again?"
Leffy lifts his wand. Lariel considers the invitation, ignoring Leffy's tone, a tone that implies that Lariel is smaller and weaker and always will be. He smiles, painful as it is.
"I won't get any better if I don't keep trying."
"That's the spirit."
Again, Lariel can sense the undertone by which Leffy suggests all the trying in the world won't help Lariel. He finds his teeth clenching. He takes a deep breath and tries to relax before he slowly walks back and takes a position on the edge of the circle. Lariel and Leffy spar for almost a glass. By the time they are both exhausted, Lariel's shirt is dripping wet, and he has bruises in too many places. Those bruises would be far worse if Leffy had not pulled his strikes, Lariel knows, and that leaves him feeling even more despondent when he leaves the circle. Rayala and Emeira have left, perhaps following Leffy, but Emeria remains at the table near the small fountain.
"You worked hard, Lariel,"
she says kindly.
"Hard, yes, but not good enough to hold my own."
Lariel takes a deep breath.
"There ought to be a way for me to do better against Leffy." He tries to keep his words from sounding despondent, even though that is how he feels. He glances at his aunt, whose once shimmering red hair is now mostly white, although he can sense that she still is a strong healer with a core of black order.
There is, if you're willing to work at it,
Emeria says quietly.
There is? Really? Can you show me?
If you're willing to pay the price.
The utter seriousness of her tone and the feeling of truthfulness behind her words cools his enthusiasm almost as quickly as a bucket of winter water from the swarth might have.
Come see me after dinner. If anyone asks, tell them that I think it's time for you to learn something about battlefield healing.
Won't that be lying? If it is, Mother will know.
If she concentrates.
I'm supposed to begin teaching you about some healing, and I will. That will help you with blade work.
Lariel can't help but frown.
Trust me, it will.
It will also be harder than practicing with Leffy.
Until you learn how.
Emeria smiles.
That is true of every skill worth having, you'll discover.
You sound like Grandmere.
Where do you think I learned such matters?
For a moment, Emeria seems to be somewhere else. Abruptly, she smiles.
After dinner, then? My apartments?
Thank you. I'll be there. What other choice does he have? No matter how hard Lariel tries, no matter how much instruction he gets from his father or from under Captain Wolet, Leffy seems to be getting better faster than he is. He takes his time walking back to his room up on the third level, where the breezes are stronger, but it is a good glass before he is cooled down enough to wash up and change into trousers and a plain pale green shirt for dinner. He walks to the window and stands there, letting the light spring breeze flow past him as he looks to the north, out over the small city that Sigawern has become just in the years he can remember. Once there was the single pier where the Cariel had been moored, until operating the fireship had become too dangerous, and Lariel's father had ordered it dismantled and the fittings and metal turned to other uses, with the limited amount of cupridium remaining being chaos forged into lancer sabers, lighter and stronger than the heavy iron blades of Afrit or Heldia. Now there are two shorter piers, used mostly for trading vessels, and the handful of craft used by the lancers to patrol the river. Finally, Lariel makes his way down to the small dining terrace off the main courtyard. There, every evening when the weather is good and when his father is in Sigawern, the family shares refreshments before dining. At least, Lariel reflects, they have for as long as the palace has been complete, and that has been for not quite 11 years. Not that he can remember those first years very clearly. His mother is already there, sitting at the largest table and talking with his aunt. Unlike Emeria, Zeranya is blonde, with shoulder-length, curly hair, and freckles that Lariel has inherited across her nose and below her eyes, eyes that are a watery but penetrating green. She has a strong nose, like Lariel, and an equally strong chin, unlike Lariel, whose chin is more modest. She wears a green blouse and loose green pantaloons, what most healers wear, especially in public, where all women also wear loose silky scarves that cover their hair and lower face, or are supposed to do so. Emeria, dressed in similar fashion, although the green of her garb is slightly darker, nods to Lariel and then looks back to Zeranya. Emeira and Ryala are at another small table, moving the pegs on the circular board.
"I won!" declares Ryala. "This time I won!"
"Good dear," says Zeranya, in the calm voice that Lariel associates with healers, since both his mother and Emeria speak that way, and so did his grandmother, and all were healers. "But please don't shout it to the world.
Boasting is very unbecoming.
The brown-eyed and dark-haired Amira offers an amused smile, and Lariel understands that Ryala's victory might not have been entirely due to her skill.
That's fine when you're six, but if Leffy tried that now, you'd be furious.
As it is, Lariel bridles at his older brother's condescending attitude when they spar.
Good evening, Mother, Aunt Amaria.
Leffy's cheerful voice comes from behind Lariel. He strides past Lariel toward the refreshment table. There he picks up a glass carafe. The crystal carafes are reserved for meals with officials from Swartheld or with important merchanters, and starts to fill a squarish tumbler with a pale red vintage.
If you're going to drink wine, Leffy, Zaranya says, water it.
Yes, Mother.
Leffy smiles. Lariel can order sense his brother's anger, and that means both his aunt and possibly his mother can as well, but no one says a word. Leffy pours a small amount of water into the wine and swirls it, then walks over to the large round table that will seat eight, but is occupied only by the two women. He takes a seat on the far side of the table, facing the nearest fountain in the courtyard, a fountain with a set of nozzles that encircle a statue of Lariel and Leffy's grandsire, the Emperor Leffy, and spray a mist that both shrouds the statue and helps cool the courtyard. In turn, Lariel steps to the refreshment table and half-fills a pewter mug with the light lager. He joins the others at the adult table, taking a place beside Amaria.
It's been a cool spring, don't you think?
Asks Zaranya, clearly changing the subject from whatever she and Amaria had been discussing.
Cooler than last year, but warmer than 2 years ago, replies Amaria. I still think we'll have a hot summer. The river's lower too, a good yard.
You think that will affect the maize?
Not here, but it will farther downstream, especially south of Luba.
Amaria glances toward the archway that leads to the main corridor of the palace.
Will that mean raiders from Afrit? Asks Leffy.
Lariel can sense the eagerness in his brother's voice.
Because father has said he can ride on some lancer patrols? The arms commander of Afrit has sent a dispatch to your father saying that, if there are raiders, he will be pleased to execute publicly any who are captured, either by our lancers or his armsmen.
Zaranya smiles.
I suspect that dispatch was posted in every Afritan town on our northern border.
That might not stop them,
Leffy declares.
It will, says Amaria. The Duke's arms commander is a man of his word, for better or worse.
Leffy starts to say something, until Zaranya looks at him.
We don't have problems with Afrit, and we don't need them, Zaranya says, as though Leffy had not even opened his mouth. If there's a hot summer again this year, we'll have to deal with more marauders from Meroway, and who knows what the Duke of Helgia will do.
Amaria nods. At that moment, Zaranya glances in the direction of the archway, then smiles in pleasure as a tall and broad-shouldered figure steps onto the terrace.
Kaidrin, dear, I was getting worried.
There's nothing to worry about.
The Duke of Sigilwern offers a smile in return as he nears the table. His dark brown hair still shows not a sign of silver, nor do his thick dark eyebrows, nor would any beard he grew, although he has never grown one, not that Lariel recalls.
The tariff inspectors found finished cloth inside cotton bales in a Meroean flatboat headed to Swartheld. The trader who owns the flatboat insisted that he'd taken the cargo on good faith.
I still don't like the idea of the Duke of Sigilwern acting as a tariff justicer for Afrit, declares Zaranya.
We can use the golds, and they only call for me when it's a question of law.
But Afrit gets half the golds, says Zaranya.
We'd both suffer if they paid tariffs to us and then to Afrit, replies Kaidrun. We'd have to patrol the Swarth day and night. Whether they port here or in Swartheld or any of the Afrit river towns, we get a share of the tariffs.
Not a huge share, rejoins Irania, and we have only to rely on the Duke's count.
That, Lariel knows, is always less than it should be, but it is another matter never mentioned except among family, and never by any children.
It's better than fighting over it, don't you think? Besides, the arrangement means that more traders from the south stop here for provisions and other goods that they can sell downriver without paying tariffs. That's helped build Sigawern. We can't afford to dream about what cannot yet be. We just need to build, brick by brick. Those tariffs are what funded the ministry building, and what pay for not only the river port inspectors, but also for some of the tariff collectors and others.
What did you decide on the cloth smuggler? Asks Ameria smoothly, before Zeranya can say more.
We took a tenth part of the cloth and fined him 2 golds. He should consider himself fortunate.
Even Lariel knows that the cloth or the proceeds from its sale will not be reported to Duke Atroyan's inspectors. The golds will, because they are recorded on the passage documents.
He should indeed, declares Irania.
And for dinner?
Asks Kaidrun, before turning to the refreshment table and pouring a full tumbler of the deep red wine.
Goat by Astrus, replies Irania. Young goat.
Lariel wonders from where the cooks had obtained the marinated sweet peppers that surround the strips of braised goat before each tube is batter-dipped and fried. It seems early for peppers.
The peppers came from the sheltered garden on the south side of the palace, Lariel, explains Ameria.
Her reply to his unspoken question reminds him again of how really good healers can sense how people feel, even when they say nothing or their faces reveal little, although he suspects his expression might well have been less than impassive.
Better by Astrus than Burka,
says Kaidrun with a smile.
I think I'd actually prefer the Burka.
Zeranya smiles.
We're having that for dinner tomorrow, but I'll tell the cooks to be sparing with the chilies.
Before long, everyone is seated at the long dining table, with Lariel's father at the head, and his mother to his right, and Leffy to his left. Ameria sits beside Leffy and Lariel, beside his mother and across from his aunt. Ameira is seated on Lariel's other side, with Ryala beside Ameria. Because he serves Ameira before himself, Lariel is one of the last to try a Biastra. He hopes that the young goat is less gamey than what he has tasted before. Not only is it barely gamey, but the white cream sauce he has drizzled over the Biastra is excellent, with the piquancy of a good cheese and a hint of mint. He finishes the first and begins on the second, noting that Ameira has also finished her first. He serves her a second one.
I see this version of Biastra meets with your approval,
murmurs his mother with a smile.
It's excellent,
he returns in an equally low voice.
Have the river patrols seen any signs of raiders or Helgian patrols?
Leffy asks Kaidrun.
Not so far, but it's not likely to be long. The planting season is over, and usually that's when the raids begin.
Kaidrun turns to Zeranya.
This is a great improvement, dear. If the cooks can do the same in the future, we should have Biastras more often.
I think that can be managed, replies Zeranya warmly.
Excellent.
Kaidrun looks to Ameria.
Have you found any more healers for your school?
There are 2 village girls from Ensenla. They show great promise.
Ensenla? That's an Afrit, declares Leffy.
They slipped away because they would not be allowed as healers and Afrit,
explains Ameria.
They are from a peasant background.
I'm not about to turn away girls who could be good healers.
Kaidran nods.
See what you can do to suggest...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?